are a piece of work. I don't like being played, Solange. If you're not going to be genuine with me, there's not much reason for me to stay. Solange nodded slowly. You really aren't suited for politics. I never said I was. But this bill is very important to me, because the way things stand now, so many people are excluded from getting what they want and, more importantly, are being treated as second-class citizens. Okay, let's talk about the bill. Solange straightened her posture, removing herself from the more relaxed person she had wanted Aurore to believe she could be. If it was anyone else sitting across from me, I would bluntly ask what they had to offer. But I know that's not going to get me very far with you. She grinned at Aurore. Just being genuine. She pushed her glass of wine away. Many of us want the same thing. The president, Riviere, you, the socialists, the progressive wing of the MLR, Stephanie. It's just a matter of optics now. I know the president is willing to let her party members vote the way they want on this bill, but she needs some time to confer with La Roche Sr. and his cronies, and to not give the socialists an easy victory. As you just said, I'm not very good at politics. So my simple suggestion is to just do the decent thing as soon as possible. These women have waited long enough. Both the president and Riviere could benefit from this. No one has to lose. I'm all ears. Aurore was burning with curiosity. What if the president came on your radio show to discuss this very topic? Aurore's eyes grew wide. Is this your idea or the president's? Mine alone, for now. I wanted to talk about it with you first before discussing it with her. You're trying to lure me in with the prospect of having the president on my show and blindside and Riviere in the process? Clever, but not very ethical. Aurore's thoughts raced. She would give a lot to interview Dominique Laroche. She had so many questions to ask her, most of which would be censored by Solange beforehand, of course. But the opportunity loomed large in her mind. You said yourself you're not interested in the politics of it, Solange said. That doesn't mean I would betray Anne. She's a friend. I'm open to counteroffers. Solange leaned back and crossed her arms in front of her chest. Are you? Solange nodded. I need to think about this. There's time, but not too much. I will need an answer in the next few days. Aurore couldn't help a smile from spreading on her lips when she glanced at Solange next. You're so shrewd. No wonder you're chief of staff. Solange didn't say anything, but her silence was more than enough to let Aurore know she'd hit the nail on the head. Tell me honestly, how many times have you used this trick? The casual clothes, the wine. She grabbed her glass. She wanted a bit more of the delicious drink before she left. The relaxed atmosphere to bamboozle the other party and have them think you're willing to have an open conversation.
I'm very much willing to have an open conversation.
Aurore shook her head. Granted, you had me fooled for a minute or two, but that's about it. The only thing you were willing to do tonight was make me an offer I couldn't refuse under the best circumstances. I wouldn't even consider this if you had summoned me to the Élysée and treated me with your usual bitter-heartedness. Now I'm holding it under advisement. You won. In the end, politics isn't about winning, Aurore. It's about making changes. Making progress. Making a difference. Aurore huffed out a chuckle. Now you've gone too far. You just erased the last ounce of credibility you still had with me. Yet I'm serious. Solange reached for her glass of wine and cradled it in her hand. Power is all well and good, but you don't make the kind of sacrifices that Dominique has, that I have, just for the sake of it. I'm willing to believe that about Dominique. About you? I'm not so sure. That's fine. That means I've branded her well. That's what matters most. I couldn't really care less about my own image. Such burning ambition. Aurore looked her over. You're still young, Solange. La Roche isn't going to be president forever. Have you thought about your life after this is all over? Not for one single second. That's what I thought. Aurore finished the wine and shuffled to the edge of the sofa. If you stay a little longer, I'll think about apologizing to Stephanie, Solange said.
Aurore's eyes grew even wider than before.
Turns out I don't have you all figured out just yet. Sometimes, like now, I can't make head nor tail of what you say.
Aurore rose.
Either way, I don't respond well to emotional blackmail.
Sometimes I say the completely wrong thing. I'm sorry.
Solange shot up.
My desire for you to stay longer has nothing to do with my willingness to say sorry to Stephanie.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I didn't know how to make you stay. It's very simple. Just be nice.
Maybe it's simple to you.
Why do you want me to stay?
Aurore turned, and she towered over shoeless Solange.
Because, against all odds, I really like your company. I like your candor. And you don't speak half-truths like most of the people I know.
Pour me another glass of that wine, then, Aurore said, while wondering about the changes of direction Solange had made over the course of the evening already.
She blew hot and cold, claimed Aurore had to stay as far away from the president as possible, then offered Aurore to interview her.
There was a lot more to find out here, and Aurore might as well do it over another delectable glass of wine. Dominique. With Steph gone, Dominique didn't get as much sleep. She had more room in the bed, but the emptiness of the other half weighed heavy on her. She lay awake much longer than her exhausted brain could afford, realizing she had been too hard on Steph. When she glanced at her reflection in the mirror, she saw nothing but regret. But she knew Steph. She needed to give her ample time to cool off and gather her thoughts. Dominique didn't want to be suspected of putting pressure on her again, and she had plenty of other worries. Seeing Solange arrive at the Élysée that morning, for instance.
What's eating you? Dominique asked after ordering Solange to sit down.
Nothing. I was up late. She rubbed her temples. I'm working on a solution for the Riviera bill.
With a large glass of wine in your hand?
Solange took a deep breath, then looked Dominique squarely in the eye.
I know this is not professional, and I apologize, Madam President. You count on me to have a fresh head in the morning, and that is not the case today.
For Christ's sake, Solange, I'm not your headmistress.
Besides, everyone can have a bad day. Even my chief of staff.
Dominique tried a smile.
I'm this close to a solution, I promise.
Good. Because I'm seeing my father tonight, and I would like to have something to say to him that won't have him give me the cold shoulder for weeks.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Yes. If you let me ask Madame Moreau to bring you a strong cup of coffee.
Solange nodded.
Dominique placed the order and requested one for herself as well. She glanced at Solange.
This was the team meant to lead the country? One severely hungover woman and one heartbroken one?
Shoot. She sat down and leaned her elbows on her desk.
Would it help you if I apologized to Stephanie?
Dominique examined Solange's face.
That hangover must really be doing a number on her.
I think it might.
I never meant to come between you. I've always only tried to do my job.
Is that a tremor in Solange's voice?
I know that.
Dominique tried to read Solange's face, but it was as blank as the empty piece of paper lying on her desk.
I don't mean to pry, Solange. Dominique was well aware they didn't have that kind of relationship, and the last time she had tried to become more chummy with her chief of staff, things hadn't turned out too well.
But is a hangover all that's going on with you?
Pretty much.
Solange tried to straighten her posture a little.
Here's what you're going to do.
A knock came on the door, and Madame Moreau came in with two steaming cups of coffee. Dominique waited until she had left to continue.
You're going to drink that cup of coffee, take an ibuprofen, and have a nap in one of the guest rooms of the private wing. I have a meeting with the Prime and Foreign Ministers in 10 minutes. Come see me afterwards.
Dominique drank from her coffee, hoping Solange would mirror her action.
Both Stephanie and I would appreciate it if you had a word with her. I hope you know that.
I do. Solange succeeded in sitting up a bit straighter. I'll call her later today.
Where's Stephanie?
Dominique's mother asked. She's not here, Maman. You'll have to make do with just me tonight.
Is everything all right?
Decades in politics hadn't taught Dominique how to hide her emotions from her own mother. Not really, but it will be. At least she hoped it would be. Don't tell Papa, okay? I don't want him getting his hopes up.
Come on, Domi, give your father a bit more credit than that. He's grown fond of Stephanie in his own way. Just like me, he wants you to be happy.
He has a funny way of showing it sometimes. Her mother shook her head.
You have to be willing to see it.
You can't deny he treats Stephanie differently than he did Philippe. He has never invited her for lunch at the St. James, or suggested they do some clay shooting together. Dominique had to admit that even the notion of the two of them going off with a pair of hunting shotguns seemed ridiculous.
Maybe because he knows Stephanie would not enjoy either of these activities.
You might be right about that. Dominique sighed. This was her mother sitting next to her. For once, for the few minutes before her father arrived, she could let her guard down. Things are not good between us. She has left the Élysée. She's staying with friends. I can't be certain she'll come back.
Steph adores you, Domi. She'll come back.
She's not cut out for the life I'm giving her. Perhaps that was part of the attraction all along, because she's so different from everyone I know. Sometimes I feel like I'm holding her back, that I'm keeping her in a cage. It's not easy being First Lady, and not everyone wants to do it. Dominique wondered whether Solange had called Steph yet, and whether it would make a difference if they talked.
It takes sacrifice, but as long as you know why you're making the sacrifice and you stand behind those reasons, it's not that much of a hardship. Steph is a tough cookie.
I hope you're right. Dominique rolled her head back to release some tension from her shoulders. I hope you're in the mood for a good old MLR father-daughter debate tonight. It's not going to be easy to convince Papa that this bill is a good thing.
I've thought about it.
Her mother looked at Dominique intently.
You should play the sentimental card. Talk about Lisa and Didier. He really doesn't have any rational arguments against this bill. Only political ones.
We'll see about that. A split second later, the atmosphere in the room changed as Xavier Laroche waltzed in.
Here she is, he said. The greatest president this nation has ever seen.
He planted his hands on the sides of Dominique's arms and kissed her on both cheeks.
And what a sight for old sore eyes she is as well.
He sat down in his chair, the way he had done all of Dominique's life, and looked at her.
Any news from the Élysée?
He asked. As if you don't know all that goes on already. Dominique had to keep from rolling her eyes.
Ha!
He slammed a palm onto his knee.
Here we go again with the accusations of old Laroche being the shadow president of France. You and I both know that's not how it is.
Dominique had had to sit her father down a few months into her presidency and tell him his presence at the Élysée was not required every single day. But her father still had a lot of sway with the MLR, and she ran every important decision by him. Not only to keep him in the loop, but because he had much more experience than Dominique, and the necessary connections when she most needed them. And Dominique knew she would never have become president if her father hadn't hatched his plans for her from when she was a young girl. Thank goodness her mother had always been around to temper his ambitions. Dominique divorcing the father of her children and falling in love with a woman had never been part of Xavier Laroche's plans. Dominique gave her father a brief synopsis of current affairs. When it was time for dinner, every topic of conversation had been brought up, except the Rivière bill, and a potentially volatile debate about it loomed gloomily over them. I'm going to need your help, Papa, Dominique started. Her father was a dyed-in-the-wool politician, but a cry for help from his only daughter would always leave him a little weak. We're almost 2 decades into the 21st century.
I know I can only dream of being a president to whom every person in this country is equal, but I can make a difference here. The MLR can too.
Ha! The Riviera Bill. That's a tough one for me. And for the party by extension. France doesn't have to be a front-runner in this. We should at least wait until the Germans have clarified their law.
France has very different values than Germany. Equality is part of our country's very slogan. Dominique was hesitant to resort to the emotional card her mother had advised her to play. She wasn't that kind of debater. She preferred to convince the other with rational arguments. The way I see it, we can't afford to block this.
We're talking about such a small minority here, Dominique. Is it really worth shaking up the party for a few dozen same-sex couples who want a child?
A few dozen? Dominique took a deep breath. First of all, it would be worth it for only one couple. Second, it's not just same-sex couples. It's single women as well. The old law is misogynist, antiquated, and not of this time anymore. It clearly discriminates against women who don't have a male partner. It should be a no-brainer. Her father held up his hands.
Everything to do with procreation is a delicate matter. You know this. There are ethics to be considered here.
What ethics? The same ones that made homosexuality punishable by law? The same ones that didn't allow same-sex partners to be married until a couple of years ago? It's not a matter of ethics that the procedure is already available for other people. Straight people. That's just pure inequality.
Slow change is still better than no change. You know the far right is going to rally against this. You might have to deal with tout ensemble again if you allow this bill to pass. Then there's a small matter of having to cooperate with the socialists. Riviere is gunning for your job. It would be naive to think you wouldn't lose votes over this in the next election. Since the socialists have reinvented themselves, the MLR has had to move to the right a little more.
I haven't. And I will take on Riviere when the time comes. The next election is more than 2 years away. Who's to say I can't snatch votes from her more centrist base if I put my support behind this bill now? Being moderate about topics like this is, in the end, what got me elected. There are votes to be won in the middle of left and right, Papa. Xavier shook his head.
Society is polarizing more and more. It will be even worse in 2 years.
How about I run on merit, then? On my legacy and what I've been able to achieve in my 5 years in the Élysée. It might be Riviere's bill, but if it passes while I'm in office, it will be part of my legacy and she won't be able to hold it against me when the time comes.
Hear, hear,
Dominique's mother said. She had the habit of staying out of political discussions between father and daughter. Not that she didn't have plenty of her own opinions, but she preferred to express them under different circumstances.
If you're going to gang up on me.
Her father painted a small smile on his face.
What do you want me to do?
I want you to look to the future. I want you to imagine a world where people are a little bit more equal than they are now, regardless of race, sexual orientation, or class.
That sounds very socialist to me. What will you be proposing next? That we raise taxes?
He managed a tight chuckle. Having children is every woman's fundamental right. It really is as simple as that. No ethics committee can ever rule against that. Not in this day and age. Xavier sighed.
Do you realize that it's already scientifically possible for two women to produce a child together? No more men required. Is that the kind of future world you envision?
Oh, please, Papa. Don't play the threatened white male part with me. Don't even waste my precious time with that for one single second.
I'm just telling you all the arguments I'm going to have to deal with when I talk to the leadership.
You know what I think, Eleanor said. She turned to Dominique. This is not a job for your father. I'll host a dinner for everyone who needs to be convinced, and you should address them, Dominique. It's what you do best. If it comes from you, they'll buy into it.
and you'll be there to destroy any stupid arcane medieval argument they might have.
Hold on a second, her father said. We don't want the president to present herself in such a vulnerable manner, not to the hyenas of MLR's old guard.
I'm part of the MLR. I belong to this party and have done all of my life. I belonged to it long before I could even choose to, Dominique said. They will listen to her, Zave. She's their president, Eleanor said.
I'm not saying they won't listen, but it might not be as pleasant a conversation as we're having tonight.
I don't care how unpleasant it is. It's important. Dominique looked at her mother. Great idea, Maman.
Do I get any say in this?
Her father asked.
No,
Dominique and her mother said in unison. Steph was the only one left at the Barbier and Sear offices. She paced around her office, waiting for her after-hours guest. Solange had called her out of the blue that afternoon, asking if they could meet. She hadn't given much information, but there could really only be one explanation for Solange calling her and asking to meet. Dominique had sent her. Steph wasn't sure how she felt about that. On the one hand, she needed some kind of gesture from Dominique, and getting Solange to agree to this could count as quite the gesture. Then again, if pressed hard enough, Solange would do many things for Dominique she wouldn't for anyone else. Most of all, Steph didn't know what to expect from this meeting. If Solange planned to walk in here being the hard-ass she usually was, she could expect the door to be slammed in her face pretty quickly. Steph left her office and lingered in the empty reception area. She looked at the glowing letters of the name. She hadn't built this firm, not from scratch the way Juliette and Claire had, but she had contributed to its success. This was as much her firm now as it was theirs. Ironically, it was landing Dominique Laroche as a client and helping her win the election that had catapulted Steph to partner. Once Dominique had become president, Steph had had to relinquish a good deal of her regular duties. That was one of the reasons her name wasn't up there, next to Barbier and Cyr. Barbier, Cyr, and Matisse did have a good ring to it, but Steph was used to Barbier and Cyr. She didn't need her name on the wall to know she was part of the fabric of this company. Even becoming First Lady couldn't keep her away from this place. A familiar figure shuffled along the glass doors. Steph buzzed Solange in and braced herself.
I had a chat with Aurore, Solange said, once they were in Steph's office. That was the last conversation opener Steph had expected to roll from Solange's lips. She made me realize I'm the one who owes you an apology.
How did Aurore accomplish that great feat?
Let's just say she has a persuading way about her, Solange inhaled sharply. But this is not about Aurore. This is about you and me. And about the president, of course.
Of course. It's never not about the president.
If I had any part in your decision to leave the Élysée, I would like to apologize for that. It was never my intention to drive a wedge between you. I'm not sure you know this.
Of course I don't know it. You've never given me any reason to.
The same can be said for you, Stephanie. Sorry, Steph. That sharp inhale of breath again. It's the president's wish that we try harder to get along. I would like to give that another go.
Wanting it is not enough, Steph said.
That's why I'm here. As a first step in the desired direction. Steph leaned back and considered Solange's words. She hadn't forgotten her outburst at the Élysée dinner table. Her rant against lesbians and her subsequent storming off. An idea brewed in the back of her mind.
Okay. I accept your first step. But I'm going to need more. Coming here might not have been easy for you. It still doesn't prove much. And I'm going to need proof of your best intentions.
I would like to say I'll do whatever it takes. But you know I'm limited in what I can agree to.
If you want to be friendly with me, Solange,
you're going to have to behave as my friend.
What do you have in mind?
Solange scratched her cheek.
Tomorrow evening, I'm having dinner with a group of friends, Claire and Juliette and their partners, Zoya and Camille, and your new spiritual advisor, Aurore. I would like for you to join us. Be merry amongst the lesbians.
Solange dropped her hand from her cheek into her lap.
Why? I might have heard you mention these women, but that's no reason to have dinner with them. The reason is me. I need you to put your money where your mouth is. I also need you to not leave the dinner in indignation because you're too surrounded by lesbians.
Steph sighed contentedly.
Good move. She congratulated herself in her head.
What if I'm not free tomorrow evening?
Become free. What have you got going on anyway? I have access to Dominique's calendar.
This part stung, because tomorrow evening Steph and Dominique were scheduled to have some free time together.
I do have non-Elysée activities in my life. Like what?
Steph was perhaps being a tad too hard on Solange.
Trying to get out of this dinner is not going to help matters between us. You came here to apologize. I accept your apology. It's time to move to the next stage, otherwise nothing will change between us, and we'll be at each other's throats again in no time. I need to know that you don't despise me the way you made me believe at that dinner, that you dislike lesbians with such vehemence, because if you do, I can never be friendly with you, no matter how many times you apologize.
I don't have a problem with lesbians. I'm a lesbian president's chief of staff.
I think we both know that doesn't mean anything. You're MLR. You're good at pretending.
Solange shook her head. She was quiet for a few minutes. Steph let her contemplate in silence.
I'd like to make a counteroffer, Solange said. I'll come to the dinner, if I can bring the president.
Solange stared Steph in the eye. Checkmate.
You've invited Dominique and Solange to dinner?
Nadia said. Steph shook her head.
No. I invited Solange, who then invited Dominique.
This is not going to be a dinner, Juliette said. It's going to be some sort of unbearably tense farce.
Don't say that, dear, Nadia said.
This is good. This could work.
You have more faith than I do, Nods,
Steph said. Phoenix was lying half in her lap and she petted his head. Since she'd started staying with Juliette and Nadia, she had learned that stroking the dog's soft fur calmed her down. It also made her miss Pierrot even more.
Do you even want to see Dominique? Juliette asked.
I'm going to have to see her again at some point.
Sure, but is a dinner like that the right occasion?
Steph shook her head.
Probably not. Solange played it well. She's basically forcing me to contact Dominique, whose belief in the goodness of Solange's heart will grow again.
You should know by now not to mess with her. Juliette was not letting up. You cornered her. She fought back.
How long am I going to let this woman best me?
Maybe you're looking at it from the wrong perspective. She apologized. She came to you. She literally said she wants you and Dominique back together. Do you even want this woman at a dinner with your friends? Her presence will change the entire vibe,
Nadia said.
Steph nodded.
You're right, Nods. I don't really want her there.
I'm sure she won't mind being uninvited, Juliette said.
I need to think about it.
Solange wasn't so much the issue.
Dominique was.
Sleeping in Juliette and Nadia's guest room was all well and good, but Steph missed Dominique crawling into bed with her at night. She missed her smile, the light that always seemed to glow around her.
She even missed her speeches.
If the conversation with Solange had accomplished anything at all, it was making Steph realize that the status quo couldn't last much longer. She scratched Phoenix behind the ears and said,
How about we sleep on it?
Episode 17. Camille.
I'm happy you're making acquaintances, Camille said. I look forward to having them all over for dinner. She spooned some salmon tartare onto her fork and studied it, then asked, What on earth shall we cook? Or prepare an Indian feast, of course. Zoe cut a slice of her duck confit. I haven't really mastered French cuisine just yet.
You've tasted plenty of it, though.
After work, Camille met Zoe at their neighborhood restaurant, eager once again to forget about her day at the CNRS.
You could say I've been working hard at that.
This is delicious,
Zoe said with her mouth half full. They ate in silence for a while. Zoe appeared lost in thought.
Are you okay, chérie?
Camille asked. She hoped Zoya understood she could talk to her about her homesickness whenever she wanted to.
You seem miles away.
Zoya put her cutlery down. She found Camille's glance. I can't really describe how it made me feel, except perhaps a little envious. When I was at Barbier and Sear. She still had trouble pronouncing the name of Juliette and Claire's company with a proper French accent, which only endeared Zoya to Camille more.
Envious? Camille inquired. Why?
The way Steve was when she was with them. Like she was coming home and engaged in some banter with her sisters. There was something so pure and easy about it. The kind of camaraderie that sprouts when you work on a bunch of successful projects together that comes with having years of history.
Do you miss our esteemed producer, Jack?
Zoya shook her head.
No, but I do miss that vibe of working towards a common goal, side by side every day. I think that's what Steph misses too. She was like a different person when she was with her friends. A broader version of herself.
Zoya reached for her wine glass. Being a foreign correspondent is all well and good, but it's a far cry from what I used to do. I used to be part of a team. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I would like to be part of a team again. I think it might help me with feeling so out of sorts, she sighed. But of course the language is an issue. I have my expertise and my experience, but I can't just apply for a job that will make me more part of a team if I don't understand what the team is talking about. I should only speak to you in French. Give you that crash course I've been promising you. Zoya shrugged. Even then it would take years until my French is good enough to properly integrate myself, especially in my business, where it's all about words and language.
But that's just the thing, darling. You're good at words and language.
It won't take years. You've picked up so much already.
Not enough.
Maybe. But it doesn't have to be such a big hurdle.
I know we French are very chauvinistic when it comes to our language.
But this is Paris. And we do have quite a few multinationals here.
Compared to 10 years ago, we speak so much more English.
Zoya nodded thoughtfully.
I didn't only feel envy when I was at Barbier and Sear. I felt a twinge of excitement to be amongst these women who had helped elect the president. As a journalist, I've always looked down my nose at PR a little. Being snobbish about it kind of comes to the territory. But PR is so important these days. For years it was my job to pierce it, to see through it. But what if I joined the other camp? Maybe it's the kind of professional challenge I need.
Camille hadn't heard Zoya speak with such drive in her voice about anything work-related for months. She always suspected Zoya harbored much more ambition than her current job as foreign correspondent required. The short interviews with people about butter and city gardens and clean energy didn't satisfy her as much as a single in-depth interview she used to do every week.
Maybe it is. Maybe it's exactly what you need.
Camille flashed her an encouraging smile.
Do you, think I can broach the subject to dinner tomorrow?
Of course you can. You should.
Claire and Juliet own a company in the field you're interested in. They may have some leads.
And if not that, they'll probably have some invaluable tips.
I might do that then.
Zoe leaned back in her chair and shot Camille a confident smile.
They speak decent English. I might make myself understood.
There's no doubt you will.
Zoya. Zoya stirred the curry with a bit more vigor than she normally would. She inhaled deeply and let the air escape through her mouth slowly. She was cooking for two extra people, one of whom was the president of France. Moreover, Dominique and Solange's presence would disturb the atmosphere she was hoping for. Even though Steph had promised her she would talk to Dominique beforehand, there was no other way but for tensions to run high.
"Try this."
She beckoned Camille and held out a spoonful of sauce.
"Blow on it first. I don't want you to burn your tongue. It's such a precious body part."
She threw in a lewd smile.
"Delicious.
If a tad spicy," Camille said. "My palate has learned to handle it, but I'm not sure our president eats a lot of spicy food."
"We wouldn't want to give Her Eminence an upset stomach,"
so I added a bit more coconut milk,
"but I do refuse to serve bland curry."
"It's far from bland, chérie. All the spices are coming through." Zoya kissed Camille on the cheek. "Let's open the wine so it can breathe," she said, "and we can have a little aperitif already." It took the words right out of my mouth. Zoya bumped her hip against Camille's. "Oh well, then you must allow me to put them back." Camille grabbed her by the hips and kissed her on the lips.
"I'm so very sorry," Steph said after kissing Zoya and Camille hello. "Dominique was held up. I don't think she'll make it."
She handed Zoya a bottle of champagne.
"But who knows? Maybe Solange will show up. I say it's highly unlikely, though."
"Is our country in crisis?" Camille asked.
Steph shrugged.
"Who knows?"
"Have you talked?" Zoya asked.
"Very briefly on the phone. That's it," Steph said. "Solange's move hasn't worked."
"What do you mean?"
They headed into the living room. Zoya sat down with Steph for a minute. Her feet were tired from standing up in the kitchen for the better part of the day.
"I invited Solange so she could prove she isn't homophobic. In return, she wanted to bring Dominique, to force us to talk to each other."
She sighed.
"I shouldn't have used this dinner to play these kinds of games in the first place. I see that now. I'm sorry. Either way, nothing has come of it."
"But still, what was I even thinking asking Solange here? That ice queen in your beautiful, cozy home." She shook her head.
"Her mere presence would make the sauce curdle."
She grinned. Zoe was happy to see some sign of glee on Steph's face. The bell rang.
"I'll go,"
Camille said.
"There's the rest of the cavalry,"
Steph exhaled.
"In a way, I'm happy Dominique's not coming. I just want to relax with my friends."
She shot Zoya a genuine smile.
"How are you?"
Zoya was distracted by the sound of voices in the hallway. There was a mishmash of them, so she concluded Juliet and Claire must have arrived with their significant others.
"A little nervous, to be honest."
She drew her lips into a pout.
"About this lot?"
Steph tilted her head.
"No need. As long as you have plenty of wine on offer,"
she chuckled. Zoya rose to greet their guests. She was introduced to Juliet's wife, Nadia, a warm woman with hair and eyes as dark as Zoya's. Zoya immediately liked her. Claire's fiancé, Margot, was harder to read. Her smile was tighter, and her hair pulled back in a severe ponytail. She had a firm, steady grip and looked Zoya straight in the eye for a moment when they shook hands. Unlike most of the French Zoya had encountered, Margot didn't kiss people on the cheek when she first met them. While everyone was busy getting a seat and having drinks served, the bell rang again, and Zoya opened the door to Aurore. It was good to see someone she had known pretty much since the beginning of her arrival in Paris. It made her realize again how important familiar faces were in all aspects of life.
"I thought Dominique was coming,"
Juliet asked, just as Zoya and Aurore entered the living room. Steph could duck the question as Aurore was being introduced to the people she hadn't met before. When they all sat down, Steph said,
"Let's avoid the D word tonight, shall we?"
"If that's what you want," Juliet said.
"Can I mention the S word?"
"What's with all these one-letter words?"
Margot asked.
"I know who the D stands for, but you're going to have to be more clear about the S."
She sounded serious, as if she didn't crack a joke easily.
"Solange, honey," Claire explained. "Dominique's chief of staff?"
Right. Margot looked as though she wasn't that up to speed on her friend's dramas.
What about Solange?
Aurore asked. Aurore has gotten quite well acquainted with the chief of staff, Camille said, wiggling her eyebrows.
Oh, stop it, Aurore said.
Wasn't she supposed to come? Juliet asked.
Steph shrugged again. I think it's safe to say my relationship with Dominique and Solange's feeble attempt at making amends have taken a backseat to whatever's keeping them at the Élysée. Nothing new there.
Nadia, who was sitting next to Steph, put an arm on her shoulder.
I'm sorry, she said.
Then the bell rang again. Zoya witnessed Steph's muscles stiffen. Zoya rose to see who was at the door. It would either be Dominique or Solange, or both.
Bonsoir,
the woman in the doorway said. She held out a bottle of wine, her arms stiff, her smile sparse. Either Solange Garceau was nervous about being here, or she really was as uptight as everyone described her.
Please, entrez.
Zoya opened the door wide as she accepted the bottle of wine. At least they would have plenty of booze to make it through the evening. Numbers were uneven, so Zoya had discreetly removed a plate from the table and positioned herself at the head so the rest could evenly spread out. Camille sat to her left, and Nadia to her right. Steph sat between Solange and Camille, and Solange had Aurore sitting across from her. The curry was going down well. None of them, even Solange, seemed to mind a bit of spice. Now that the food had been served, Zoya could finally relax. The wine had done its bit as well. She had missed most of the conversation while she put the final touches to her dish in the kitchen, and it took her a while to catch up. They were speaking in French, and as far as Zoya understood, Camille was being frank about her work situation. Zoya cleared her throat.
Any chance you can throw some English words in there, honey? For all I know, you're slagging me off like nobody's business.
Camille brought a hand to her mouth.
I'm so sorry, darling.
She addressed the table.
Everyone, if you don't mind, let's switch to English, unless you want to say something uncouth about Zoya.
Zoya lifted her hand and waved it about.
Please, don't switch to English entirely. I need to learn more French. This is delicious,
Aurore said in English.
I haven't had this good a curry since I was actually in India.
Thank you.
It's my grandmother's recipe, Zoya said. But please continue your conversation.
Were you talking about Duflo? She looked at Camille. Camille nodded.
I was just saying that what he's doing could be seen as sexual harassment. If his actions are motivated by my sexual orientation and my gender, doesn't that automatically make it sexual harassment?
Of course it does, Aurore said. There are very clear laws against such a thing.
Solange, whose voice Zoya had barely heard all evening, said, as well as government institutions that can help you with this. You are not alone, Camille. It's very important that you know this.
I do know.
Camille put a hand on Zoya's arm.
Zoya and I are working with a lawyer who's preparing a case against him. I'm gathering evidence. It shouldn't be long now.
Every day is one too many,
Solange said. There was a strange hiccup in her voice.
Are you okay?
Aurore asked.
Yes.
Solange squared her shoulders.
This is one of the reasons I admire Dominique so much. Because she hasn't only defied the odds, she's defied all the men who never wanted her to become president. And believe me, when a woman rises to the top, some men will go to great lengths to stop her. I know all about that myself.
You're her second in command, Nadia said.
You must have had your fair share of bullies along the way.
Solange nodded.
Which is why I vowed to become more powerful than any man who has ever tried to stand in my way. I think it's also one of the reasons Dominique didn't want a male chief of staff.
Well, Laroche Sr. thinks he's in charge, obviously. But it's best to just let him think his self-glorifying thoughts.
I've yet to come across a woman who has never been inappropriately propositioned by a man who thinks he can get away with it. Just because he's a man, Claire said. Times have changed significantly since we first started Barbier and Cyr. But the things we had to hear when we just started, two women running a PR firm, with no man at the helm to guide them? We've certainly lost clients because of it. But then again, those were people and companies we never wanted to work with in the first place. We've gained a lot of clients because of who we are as well, Juliet said.
And luckily times have changed, Margot said. I was one of two women when I did my surgical residency. This year's group of residents at Saint-Vincent is split pretty evenly.
It's about time women started running the world. Clearly men have had the reins for too long, and have not done a good job of it, Aurore said.
We mustn't make men obsolete, but all the old ones have to go. The new generation of men will hopefully be different, Camille said.
I have raised my son as a feminist. I like to believe he respects women. And I never forbade Flo to do anything her brother was allowed to do because she was a girl, and vice versa.
She sighed.
Of course, their father didn't set the best of examples when it came to using women for his pleasure.
We're all women in jobs with a certain status. What's happening to Camille right now has happened to all of us to some degree while we fought to obtain our position. It's a given. I can only hope the women who come after us will have it easier.
Zoya paused.
I am, of course, referring to my previous means of employment when I say I had a job with status.
Do I sense some discontent with your current job? Juliet asked.
At least I don't get harassed. And being a foreign correspondent, my interviewees know in advance that they'll be addressed in English. I try to throw in a phrase in broken French once in a while to charm them. That usually works.
Zoya grinned at Juliet.
I can honestly say I've never been... How did you call that, Nods? Inappropriately propositioned at work, Steph said. Working at Bobby and Sear has a great deal to do with that. Of course, I got actual death threats after Dominique and I came out of the closet. And the two ensemble people would like to have me for breakfast.
She shrugged.
It's a given that you get threatened when you're a public figure coming out of the closet.
At least Dominique showed everyone and became president regardless,
Aurore said.
Big changes usually happen slowly.
Annoyingly slowly, Juliet said.
How many men work at Bobby and Sear?
Zoya asked, no longer able to curb her curiosity. Claire said. Let me think. Five, Juliet said. Three of them are gay.
What about the clients?
Claire quirked up her eyebrows and paused to think. Roughly estimated, I think about half and half. But we do deal with assistants a lot. And most of the assistants we talk to are female. Most support jobs, often to males, are still occupied by women. As though it's so unthinkable that a male CEO would ever have a male assistant.
Or it's below men to apply for such a position,
Aurore said. Men have always had better access to higher education, which is why they hold the higher-up positions. Luckily, that's changing as well, Camille said.
And high-up women can be just as bitchy and willing to abuse their power as men,
Nadia said.
Hear, hear, Aurore said. When a woman wants to make it to the top, she has to deal with the men and the women who are envious of her. Men make it so much easier for themselves in that regard. The old boys' network is still very effective. And the new boys' one as well.
Yet here we are, nine accomplished women sitting around a table. No bitchiness and not a man in sight.
Steph held up her glass. She turned to look at Solange, who, with rigid movements, clinked her glass against Steph's. Soon they all joined in a toast. After the murmurs and clinking of glasses died down, Zoya cleared her throat.
I've been thinking about going into PR, she said. Seeing as we have a few PR mavens gathered here tonight, I wanted to pick your brain.
Really?
Steph was the first to react.
Do you mean Zoya Das of the Zoya Das Show is available for Barbier and Sear to acquire?
Zoya had to keep her mouth from falling open.
What do you mean?
Steph has been dreaming of making you an offer ever since you went to see her and Dominique in Juan-le-Pin that time, Juliet said. A journalist of your caliber would be an asset to any PR firm, Claire said.
Okay, let's try to at least get the facts straight, Steph said. Unlike what my esteemed boss just said, I have not been dreaming of it for that long. But I did see the possibility. The reason why I didn't ask you sooner as well, to be honest,
my own preoccupations, for starters, but also the fact that I wanted to see how things went for you here first. Working at Babia and Seer is fun and rewarding and, as we just discussed, it's a very female-friendly environment, but there's also a lot of pressure. Our client base has evolved since the elections.
With Steph only working half-time and me having scaled back, we are hiring, Juliet said. We're constantly hiring these days, or so it seems.
We're growing, Claire said, and examined Zoya's face.
You should come in for a chat.
I did come in to interview you a few days ago, Zoya joked.
Ditch the interview and come with different intentions this time, Claire said.
I'm convinced we can work something out.
Are you serious? Zoya asked. I was just hoping to get some pointers on how to get a foot in the door in the sector. I certainly never dreamed of scoring the interview right off the bat.
That's life for you, Steph said. Sometimes things don't go your way, and sometimes they really do.
Well then, Zoya was stumped for words. Is everyone ready for dessert?
Aurore. The more wine she drank, the more Aurore's gaze drifted to Solange. She had on part of her usual uniform, a starched white blouse, but was also wearing jeans like the other night. Solange didn't appear totally at ease, but she didn't look as though she was going to bolt for the door any minute either. Now that the shock of seeing her here had worn off, Aurore thought it was time to truly test Solange.
To get back to a previous topic, she said, how about we talk about the greatest inequality of all?
She tried to hold Solange's gaze, but it skittered away.
What's that then? Camille asked, an amused grin on her lips.
The female orgasm, of course.
Oh, of course, Camille replied. This is Aurore's preferred topic of conversation with the Puss Café. Before you start, Aurore, let me take orders.
While Camille poured whiskey for Nadia and Zoya, cognac for the Barbier and Seer ladies, staff included, and amaretto for Solange and her, Aurore kept her eye on Solange to see if what she had said would prompt her to want to make a run for it. It seemed that either she was keen to prove to staff that she was willing to give a hesitant friendship a try, or she was truly enjoying herself, or, and Aurore was reluctant to allow herself this thought, but the Puss Café was being poured. Why the hell wouldn't she anyway? Maybe Solange had stayed this long because she was enjoying everyone's company, and Aurore's in particular.
Camille, you're the perfect example of what I'm trying to say.
Aurore fixed her gaze on her friend.
How much importance did your ex-husband attach to your pleasure? Did it ever even occur to him to put it before his?
It was a rhetorical question. Camille didn't need to reply.
We may have made leaps and bounds when it comes to general equality, but when you scratch the surface even a little bit, you'll soon find that many women are not equal to their counterparts. And this includes their husbands just yet. In sexuality especially, everything is geared towards the male organ and orgasm. Do you know how many men are convinced that women reach climax through penetration alone? Doesn't that make you want to hang your head and cry?
Aurore looked at her audience. Half of these women she had just met for the first time. She could only hope they sometimes listened to her radio show and knew what she was all about.
You're all lesbians. You all probably come like nobody's business. Because there's no man in your bed who believes all it takes is for him to stick his penis in your vagina.
Solange cleared her throat.
Oh yes. So sorry, Solange. I was generalizing. And I should know better by now than to call you a lesbian.
Does that mean Solange doesn't know how to come like nobody's business?
Steph said, a wicked grin on her face.
Some of us don't like to discuss our sex life with a bunch of people they barely know, Solange said curtly. Fair enough.
Steph seemed to have mellowed as the evening progressed. Perhaps she was impressed that Solange had stayed this long.
You remind me of a friend of mine back home, Aurore, Zoya said. When Caitlin comes over for a visit, I should definitely introduce you to.
That should make for fun times, Camille added.
Aurore tried to smile as warmly as possible.
She wasn't on the radio tonight.
She had 8 pairs of eyes on her. I would love to meet a like-minded soul, of course. She was dying to get on with her discourse. As Camille knows, I have slept with my fair share of women who identify as heterosexual. This is by no means me boasting about my sexual prowess, because it doesn't have much to do with it either way. But do you have any idea how many of them simply have no idea what an orgasm feels like? Isn't that just the saddest thing? These women are not uneducated and certainly not stupid. They've just gotten older, safe in the knowledge that their pleasure is of no, or at the very least, of lesser importance. I frankly find it infuriating. It is infuriating, Steph said. But let's not lump all straight or formerly straight women into the same unknowing group. Dominique, for one, knew exactly what she wanted and how, from the very first time we slept together. She's the president. She's hors catégorie, Ross said.
And you've made it your mission to teach as many straight women how to come, in person?
Solange said, her voice shrill. Camille chuckled.
No, of course not. But it's a powerful thing when you make someone climax for the first time in their life.
Aura felt a hot blush creep up her cheeks.
Aren't orgasms supposed to be mostly in our heads?
Nadia asked. Aura nodded.
The female orgasm is a powerful but complex thing.
So what you're saying,
Solange said, her tone low but harsh, is that any woman who has difficulties orgasming should go to bed with another woman? Preferably with you.
Aura imagined puffs of steam escaping her ears as she tried to come to grips with this conversation. She shook her head.
That's absolutely not what I'm saying.
I don't have a recording of what you just said, so I can't replay it. But that's very much what it sounded like to me.
Solange looked around the table for support.
I think what Aurore is trying to say is that there is still a lot of inequality between women and men when it comes to pleasure in the bedroom, Steph said.
Another example is all the men who don't have the first clue what two women could ever get up to in bed together without a penis.
They come at it from their own experience, Claire said. The media doesn't exactly help.
Claire tends to shout at the television when they show unrealistic sex scenes. You know, simultaneous orgasms and all that. I tell her it's just TV. It's just make-believe, Margot said.
That's exactly what it is. Make-believe. But we mustn't forget the enormous impact television has on our lives. If we could start by showing a few more men go down on women instead of just shoving it in after 1 second of foreplay and having the women moan with pleasure after 30 seconds of pumping, that would make a big difference, Claire said.
You make an excellent point, Aurore said. I write to the heads of programming of all TV stations every year, asking them to consider this when they select their content. It's more of a token action to raise awareness, because they can hardly select shows that don't exist.
Aurore glanced at Solange. She sat there straight-backed, her lips pursed together, very much looking as though she was contemplating a swift exit.
It's getting late, Juliet said. We should talk about something a bit more cheerful than how women are still inferior to men. This is starting to depress me.
Thank goodness that we are, despite all the propaganda to the contrary. The stronger sex,
Nadia said.
We can take it, and we will never stop fighting.
Please, excuse me.
Solange pushed her chair away and headed for the bathroom. Steph tilted her head sideways.
I think the chief of staff is ready for a change of topic as well. But I must say, I'm impressed she has stayed this long.
I'll have a word with her, see how she's feeling.
Aurore excused herself and waited for Solange in the hallway.
Hey. Aurore said when Solange exited the bathroom. Are you all right?
Fine.
She held the door open for Aurore. Aurore closed it and said,
I'm sorry if I made you uncomfortable in there. It wasn't my intention.
You didn't. I can handle myself, even among hardcore left-wing lesbians.
A small smile played on Solange's lips.
Speaking of, have you made a decision about having the president on your show yet?
I need to know by Monday.
Then I will call you on Monday. Unless...
Aura inched closer.
We see each other before then.
Why would we do that?
Solange's tone of voice wasn't congruent